From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleinman, and you're listening to Good Food.
We're just 5 days away from the big day, the Super Bowl of the food world, Thanksgiving.
It's an imperfect holiday, rife with historical baggage and a lot of opinions, likes and dislikes swirling around the table. I mean, hashtag family, right? Like all holidays, it's messy. But it's the one food holiday we've got, and after covering this celebration for so many years, what brings me the most joy is how every family makes it their own. So yes, on today's show, we'll answer some of your cooking questions, but we're also going to share stories of first Thanksgivings, of new traditions, and the generosity that can be extended across the table. Our first story comes from Hina Patel, chef behind Besharam in San Francisco, where she cooks vegetarian food inspired by the flavors she grew up with in Gujarat. Hina remembers her first Thanksgiving in America.
When we came here, that was 1992, we came here on a business visa. So very quickly, we settled with a liquor store and a flower store. My husband ran the flower store and I ran as a florist next to each other. And next to our was a German restaurant called Hofbräu that was in Terralinda in Bay Area. They invited me and Paresh to their house for a Thanksgiving. That was my first year and first memory of to know what to eat, how they celebrate Thanksgiving. And I saw all the side dishes were vegetarian. Of course, I couldn't eat the turkey. That was their main. But I got aware of the tradition of Thanksgiving. And I was excited to come to America and know more about what they eat and how they celebrate and the importance behind it.
Do you remember what some of those side dishes were that were on the table?
There were a lot of marshmallows involved with the sweet potato. I mean, they are not alive anywhere, but I was hoping there are more spiciness to each dishes. There were Brussels sprouts there, green beans with the fried onion. And all those versions, I never had it before. I was very excited to try. I found it a little sweeter, even the side dishes. But I first time I tried Brussels sprouts or green beans with the fried onion. And I think he made a boiled cabbage to go with the corned beef as well on a side. So I had a boiled cabbage. So they were totally different way than I cook.
So how have you adapted to the holiday? What are some of the things that you like to serve?
I do caramelized Brussels sprouts. That my daughter loved that dish. I use jaggery and tamarind to caramelize slowly cooked Brussels sprouts, and they come out very crispy, sweet, and they go perfect as a side dish. I do use pumpkin halwa. I make, of course, our squash. Orange pumpkin are in season. I take out the meat of the pumpkin and I cook it with the, I kind of saute with the ghee and add the sugar, pistachios and nutmeg and cardamom. That halwa I like. So I do use the ingredients, but I kind of change it with my own flavor.
That was Hina Patel, chef behind the San Francisco restaurant Besharam. A few weeks ago, I asked Genevieve Coe, senior editor at the New York Times, to join me for an Instagram Live to answer your Thanksgiving questions. It's hard to imagine someone more suited to the task than Genevieve. As a recipe developer and food writer, she's covered countless Thanksgivings at food magazines, newspapers, not to mention cooking for her own family. Our entire hour-long conversation is archived on KCRW Good Food's Instagram page, but I want to play some of my favorite bits throughout today's show, starting with Genevieve's answer to this question from Good Food listener Leanna. How do you delegate cooking tasks when you're a control freak?
I laughed out loud when I read that one because, Leanna, I have asked myself that same question, not just on Thanksgiving, but basically anytime anyone is in the kitchen with me. who is not a professional cook. And one thing I've learned for sure over the years is, you know, there are for sure times to just let it go. But Thanksgiving is a really high stress day anyway. And if you are a control freak, especially in the kitchen, to be totally honest about how I've learned to deal with it, it's to actually, for people want to help, and a lot of times people really, really want to help, I try to think of things that I actually truly do not care about on that day whatsoever, and delegate those tasks. So those would include setting the table for sure. Like I don't, you know, to each her own, but like, I don't care about setting the table. I don't care about flower arrangements, any decor stuff. I just want the food to look good. But in terms of which forks are where, I absolutely delegate that. I'm not a drink maker. So, you know, I can make you a cocktail, but like if someone else wants to handle drinks, someone else wants to set up a cheese platter, be my guest. So I think that's what I try to do. And I actually try to have that in mind ahead of time, anticipating who will want to help in which different ways. And then short of that, then I really try to think of those tasks, which again, I know that like, I'll be totally fine. Like anyone can peel the potatoes. I'm totally fine with that. And I know that's terrible because I feel like the lesson should be let people help and let it go. But you know, Thanksgiving, it's a tough day to let stuff go. So I would say like, let go of the stuff that you actually don't care about. And then the stuff that you know that you really do, just say like, hey, actually, I got this. Like, I'm going to handle, you know, the turkey. I'm going to baste. I'm going to mash the potatoes. But like, oh, can you help me put together a cheese platter? Or, you know, depending on the scenario, like, can you help me hold the baby, you know, whatever it is. Not that you don't care about holding your baby, but if you're cool about it, people hold it, or whatever the situation is.
Before we get into the Thanksgiving meal, I want to share another Thanksgiving tradition with you. This one from Houston-based Nigerian chef Kavachi Ugebu, author of The Art of Fufu.
Okay, so in Igbo culture, Thanksgiving is considered Christmas to us. Every auntie wants to show up and give everyone their best. So it's considered like a challenge. And most of the time I win. So yes, I win. And what you must have like present. If I'm go to like one of my friend's house, she always has designer stew. And if it's in my house, we have to have jollof rice. Jollof rice is one of the rices that you must have at any African house, especially during the holidays, because it's considered party rice. And so being that, you know, whenever we have Thanksgiving, it's considered like a gathering, special event. So jollof rice is a must in every West African, well, Nigerian house. Just being able to see my family members whenever they come into town, because most of the time they all live in different parts of the world, like in Nigeria, Seattle, some live in London. So for them to just all come back to Houston and us being under like one roof, it's like, that's our Christmas. Like we all are all together. Cause most of the time, Christmas time, a lot of the Nigerians go back home for Christmas. So November is pretty much where no one is traveling except coming home.
That was Chef Kavachi Ugebu, author of The Art of Fufu. After a short break, Genevieve and I dive into the heart of the meal. Plus, we hear from two vegan chefs who successfully introduced plant-based dishes to their family's Thanksgiving table. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back to Good Food. I don't know if everybody's tired of turkey or if the radical reimagining of life thanks to COVID has given us permission to break all the rules of the before times, but this seems to be the year when many friends, listeners, and colleagues are ditching the big bird. For many who have turned to a plant-based diet, Thanksgiving becomes a challenge to navigate. Do you politely decline the sausage stuffing? Do you bring your own veggie pot pie? Or do you request that the whole family follow your lead and try celebrating without a burnished bird as the centerpiece? Joanne Lee Molinaro of Korean vegan fame navigated these waters years ago when she decided to become a vegan. She tells us the whole story, starting with what Thanksgiving looked like in her home growing up.
You know, my parents were very reluctant to serve us American food. And a lot of that was because they didn't know how to make American food, and they weren't financially well enough to go and buy us like American dinners at restaurants or even fast food. It was too expensive for them. So we basically had to eat Korean food all the time, and we hated eating Korean food all the time because we felt like it was just another area of difference between us and our friends and you know, society at large, if you will. But in the holidays, our parents would make a dispensation and they would try to incorporate American recipes in our dinner. And so a lot of our Thanksgiving dinners were very unusual. You'd see like a roasted turkey in the middle and then carby on the side, or like, you know, sweet potato, yams, and then like kukuma, which is Korean sweet potato. So it was like a mishmash of a lot of different things. And we kind of sustained that tradition of, you know, Korean and American Thanksgiving food for a very long time until finally, you know, I think later on when the bunch of us kids were kind of like, actually, we just really like Korean food. and then our Thanksgiving looked a lot more traditional Korean fare.
And what about as you transition to veganism?
That is a really good question, Evan. I think that of all the times where I've perhaps knocked heads with my family, it has been around the holidays, because obviously, again, that sort of kind of anticipation of getting to eat something special on Thanksgiving or Christmas is something that we all instinctively have. And so when I say, hey, what about making this Thanksgiving a completely plant-based meal? There's a lot of pushback to that. They don't really like that idea because they want to be able to eat the things that they've been looking forward to eating the whole time. The last time we did Thanksgiving as a family pre-COVID, they did agree to a completely vegan Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I have to say, it was wonderful. I mean, nobody left the table feeling like they were hungry or they needed to go to another meal. Everybody contributed to what I thought was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful meal. And I made, you know, pecan pot pie, which is my, you know, Thanksgiving contribution in the cookbook that my parents absolutely adore.
Can you talk us through the menu a little bit?
Yeah. So the Thanksgiving menu, we have sort of our favorites, which include japchae. That's a glass noodle dish. It's kind of like a glass noodle pasta salad. It's very colorful, and it's often trotted out during holidays because it is a somewhat labor-intensive dish to make. All of the vegetables are stir-fried separately. So it's one of those dishes that you make for somebody that you love very, very much because a lot of time goes into it. So japchae is often, you know, I asked for it on my birthday, and we definitely have it on holidays like Thanksgiving. The other big holiday dish that we do for both Thanksgiving and Christmas is egg rolls. My mom's been making egg rolls ever since I was a little girl. I remember my teachers, like in third and fourth and fifth grade, they'd be like, oh, so did your mom make any egg rolls by any chance? And they would ask for it, and you know, it was a big like hit all the time. So veganizing my mother's egg roll recipe was really, really fun. And it's now a part of basically every holiday meal. And it's absolutely fantastic. They always disappear immediately. And then finally, like I said, the desserts were, you know, Korean families typically are not really big into desserts. They usually prefer fresh fruit. But when I came out with two things, my pecan pot pie, which incorporates red bean paste, as well as my patbang or my pot bread, just sort of like a braided challah bread with you know, sweet red bean paste stuffed into it. Those are two things that my family really, really love and basically ask for every single holiday.
Joanne Lee Molinaro is the blogger turned cookbook author behind The Korean Vegan. We've got all the recipes that Joanne talked about on our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. When it came to introducing his family to vegan Thanksgiving, cookbook author Bryant Terry had a different approach. Let the food speak for itself.
So one of my favorite Thanksgiving stories, and this is kind of bringing together a lot of things, just a really informative moment about how to feed my family and take care of them in a way that doesn't come across as, you know, self-righteous or judgmental in many of the ways that I think they had seen me showing up when I was in high school, when I first started moving towards veganism, and I was just the biggest jerk. I was such a self-righteous, dogmatic, judgmental, finger-wagging little nanny, just like in everybody's face, telling them they should be a vegan, even though I just became a vegan like a month ago. So anyway, there was this moment back in the day, and this was around the time either Vegan Soul Kitchen had been published recently or I was about to publish it. But one of my favorite recipes in that book is the roasted red potatoes with parsley pine nut pesto. And we had a gathering with the family for Thanksgiving. And I remember, you know, there was the kind of whatever drowned in mayonnaise potato salad that's ubiquitous across Thanksgiving tables. And I decided that I wanted to show up differently than I had in my earlier years. So rather than feeling like I needed to announce that this is the vegan potato salad, everyone, I just decided to just put it on the table and let the food speak for itself. And I remember my mom had, she wanted me to do some errand for her. I forget what it was, but I left and I came back and the drowned in mayonnaise potato salad was largely untouched. And my hippie roasted red potato salad with the parsley pine nut pesto was almost gone. People loved it. And they were just talking about just how they had never eaten this potato salad with this green dressing on it. And that led to people just wanting to know more about plant-based eating and asking a lot of questions. And the lesson that I learned then is one of the most powerful ways to help people think differently about food, to move them, to shift their habits, their attitudes, their politics regarding food is delicious food. I don't need to harangue. I don't need to come in and be a jerk like I used to be. And obviously I'm not in that place anymore, but I think that people often feel like it's a, you know, there's some deficit. They're going to be missing things. And I try to emphasize all the bounty and diversity and fun things that we can explore when we're really digging more deeply in the vegetable kingdom.
That was Bryant Terry, author of many vegan cookbooks and the founder and editor-in-chief of Four Color Books. And while we're on the subject of vegan Thanksgiving, let's talk about faux turkey. We received a question from a listener named Roxanne asking for tips for faux turkey. And so when I talked with Genevieve Coe, senior editor at the New York Times, on Instagram Live a few weeks ago, I asked her what she thought.
Well, so my family, I'm from a Cantonese family, is I think, as you know, born and raised in Monterey Park. And in sort of a number of like Cantonese Buddhist or vegetarian traditions, there are a lot of mock meats. So faux turkey, not turkey so much, but faux chicken, faux duck. If I wanted to go that route, I don't know if this listener is in LA, I would just drive and buy one of those. But then you're going with a really like Chinese food flavor profile. Those sort of mock meats, they're already done. You know, I don't know that I would want to really spend the time or energy to do a like tempeh or tofu based imitation on my own.
I was thinking like 3-cup tofu.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I thought the question was like, how do you make a mock turkey? And my answer is I wouldn't. I guess I would either go buy mock poultry from one of these great San Gabriel Valley vegetarian Chinese restaurants, or I would just do something that is really vegetable, like celebrating a vegetable, as opposed to trying to create something that tastes or has the texture of turkey. But yeah, like 3-cup, yeah, any sort of tofu dish would be delicious. I would still go vegetable first. Even just, I think we talked about this last year, I do like just the big whole roasted heads of cauliflower with like some fabulous, you can even go gravy if you want to stick with that sort of flavor profile, or any amazing sauces. Things are like, you know, big roasted squash.
Yeah, I love that cauliflower idea. Also, recently, I don't know if you saw the book Artie Parties by Julia Sherman yet.
I did. Yeah.
So she had a recipe in there for cabbage tinga. And I thought that was an interesting combination of taking the flavor profile of tinga and mm-hmm. using it on cabbage. And you could do that with a whole cabbage and roast it. That would also be beautiful.
I just saw today, I forget on what, in what medium, but it was so amazing. It was a loaf of bread shaped like a turkey.
Oh, I
it
saw
was
that
the cute. Did you see it, Evan?
Oh, I saw it on Instagram, and it was a shot of the baker doing the final forming of it. It was so smart.
So smart. Like 100%, I would also go that route. If you want something that like looks like an actual fake turkey.
That would be awesome.
I can't believe I didn't think of that before. Oh my gosh.
Pull the legs off.
Yes.
So one of our questions is, are there any vegan gravy recipes?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing with gravy is you can absolutely even do just a really standard roux gravy, just using oil instead of butter for the base and then sticking with stock. You know, again, I think this is where I'm a huge fan of mushrooms for that sort of that umami, for that depth, for that flavor. And then really long, I love like long caramelized onions in this case. I think just those ingredients, that's all you need. Well, and I always like to throw in some herbs and garlic for sure. But yeah, you can absolutely do that. What's your vegan gravy? What's your route for going vegan gravy?
I mean, that Martha Shulman mushroom gravy recipe that's on the New York Times cooking site.
It's really good. It's delicious.
It's really good. And mm-hmm. yeah, and I made it like years ago when she first published it. And mm-hmm. yeah. And actually, I think when I went to a friend's house one year to do a good food segment about tofurkey, I think he made a very similar kind of gravy. And so the tofurkey ended up being palatable because the gravy was so delicious.
Wow.
We received so many inquiries about meatless mains this year, so I want to give another shout out to the New York Times cooking recipe for mushroom Wellington that Tejal Rao mentioned last week on the Market Report. We already have a recipe on our site, kcrw.com/goodfood, and according to Genevieve, it tastes as good as it looks.
It's phenomenal. So it was developed by Alexa Wybell. We call her Lex here on staff. We adore her. In no small part because she keeps coming up with these amazing plant-based dishes where it's such a cliche, but you don't feel like you're missing anything. And if anything, you actually get such a showstopper. So her mushroom beef Wellington is incredibly delicious because the mushrooms develop so much flavor. They're actually cooked down first. So not only does that give them so much flavor, but it also prevents the pastry from getting soggy, which is really hard to do with an actual beef Wellington. But with the mushrooms, you're not risking overcooking in the way that you would risk overcooking beef, but you also just get such deep and intense flavor from those mushrooms. And I think the other thing I really, really love about that dish is that it's stunning. You know, I tend to be a person who always prioritizes flavor over looks. I'm like, you know, as long as the dish is delicious, who cares what it looks like? But for something like Thanksgiving, you want something that feels like a centerpiece. Piece, like something that's really spectacular. And that beef Wellington, or not beef, that mushroom Wellington absolutely does that.
And I think the other, for me, the big wow non-turkey dish is the stuffed pumpkin, which I've made in so many different ways. But first, I talked about it with Ruth Reichel, who had been doing it for years. And then Dory came out with... In one of her previous books, she came out with, I think it's called Dory's Everything Good Pumpkin. And it's so easy because you're basically just making a strata inside the pumpkin. So it's layers of stale bread. Mm-hmm. And when I do it, I just put greens, cooked greens that I've cooked
so
and squeezed rice and tons of onion. Oh, and Gruyere interspersed,
ooh,
of course.
Yum. Yeah.
And then you're dousing it with a mixture of broth. So you could use a vegetable broth and cream. And then you rub the whole squash, the whole pumpkin with olive oil. So when it bakes, it becomes this burnished mahogany. And the insides souffle up. So the bread pudding comes up.
Gosh. It sounds so good.
It's stunning. And you know, once did a party, a catering job where I made 10 of them. So making one of them is not hard. And in terms of oven real estate, if you are making a plant-based Thanksgiving, then that takes up the real estate of the bird.
Yeah. Dory actually just did another recipe for us that just published. That's a sweet potato and apple galette. So it's not like a huge centerpiece, but I think there's still a lot of people who either are just keeping things small or, you know, just keeping things casual. And it's a sweet potato and apple galette. That's a really great sort of savory baked good for beginners because you just roll the dough flat. You don't even fold it over the edges and you have this mix of sweet potatoes and apples. So it has such great autumnal feelings. But, you know, if you're just having like two or three or four people and you just want to do something really simple and low key, that galette is, and it'd be a lovely appetizer too, but that galette is really lovely.
Do you remember your first encounter with Brussels sprouts? I actually went to the backyard and threw them over into the neighbor's yard. Amisha Gurbani will never forget hers. The jam maker and author of Mumbai Modern shares a vivid memory of an iconic Thanksgiving vegetable.
I came to this country in 1999 for my master's to Los Angeles. I was doing my master's in computer science at USC, and it was my first encounter with Thanksgiving, the biggest holiday in America. I gathered with a bunch of my friends from Mumbai and a few international friends that I'd made at college. We all got different dishes. It was like an international potluck, people from different parts of the world and from the United States. And it was my first encounter with Brussels sprouts. I did not like it. It was pungent and just not what I expected out of this pretty green vegetable. Fast forward a few years later, it's an acquired taste, and I started liking Brussels sprouts, and I used to make this dish every year for Thanksgiving for my family, where I made like an Indianized version of it, where the vinaigrette has toasted coriander and cumin spices in it, along with some za'atar and smoked paprika. I put it all together, roast it in the oven, and then I mix it with dates, walnuts, and pomegranate arils, and it just gives a beautiful taste and texture to this dish, and it's become our tradition now, my tradition.
Amisha Gurbani is the author of Mumbai Modern and the creator of the Jam Lab. We've got a recipe for her Brussels sprouts on our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. And the one eater that Genevieve Coe and I haven't yet addressed in our Thanksgiving Q&A, the pescatarian. So if you or your loved ones can't live without fish, we have ideas for you too.
I grew up with fish every Thanksgiving because I grew up in a family where I was the first generation born here. And so my parents and my whole extended family, like nobody really, obviously they didn't grow up with Thanksgiving, but we still did like the roast turkey, but most of the other dishes were just sort of the dishes that we would have for a big family gathering anyway. So we also always had steamed fish. Everybody would take some turkey, of course, because it was Thanksgiving, but mainly we would eat the fish. I know that some people... If you're a really dedicated pescatarian, then probably you're comfortable with whole fish anyway. And I know steamed fish is a bit tricky if you don't have a big enough steamer, but I think whole fish on the bone is such a nice thing to do for Thanksgiving. You can stuff them, throw them in the oven. They cook so quickly, so they can just go in there right before. I think that's a really nice thing to do. Or I'll often do like a whole side of salmon or steelhead trout. And I actually published my sort of go-to party recipe on New York Times Cooking for last Christmas. And it's just a baked salmon. And it's so simple. It's only three or four ingredients. Because I always feel like for these holiday gatherings, you know, I prefer to just like put that whole fish down, slather it with, it's like a mustard mayo, maple sauce, and just throw it in the oven. 15 minutes, done. And just serve it. And it looks really nice because it's this whole side of salmon, but it requires very little effort and time.
I love that idea. And I have to say that in the past, I've kind of cheat oven steamed whole fish by just doing whatever I'm going to do with it and putting it between two sheets of parchment paper and then adding a little a bit of water to the pan. And it kind of like poaches, steams, and it's very quick. And maybe for this occasion, it's a good time to bring back the 80s favorite, which was the side of poached salmon.
Yes.
Shingled with cucumbers and served with a little sour cream dill sauce.
Well, you know, I mean, people are so into 90s food now. And I'm certainly at that stage where I'm like, wait, 90s food as in just food I still often eat and enjoy. But yeah, we should just go back to take it back to the 80s.
In a minute, my personal favorite part of the Thanksgiving meal, stuffing. We've got ideas when good food continues. And speaking of turkey, this next story, courtesy of Dory Greenspan, really cracked me up. Dory's the author of 14 cookbooks, including her latest, Baking with Dory. She lives much of her life in Paris, but because of her family here in the States, she's never spent a Thanksgiving overseas. But that doesn't keep her from wanting to show her French friends what Thanksgiving is all about. So one year, she went in search of ingredients in the middle of spring.
I bought a turkey. I had never bought a turkey in Paris. And I was waiting, you know, in that long line, and it was at the Boulevard Raspail market, waiting for a turkey. And it must have been, it was spring. And I get the turkey, and I said to the poultry woman, how shall I cook it? And she told me, cook it at 150 degrees Celsius, which is like 300 degrees. And I had never cooked a turkey that low. And it's such a low temperature. And the people who were waiting behind me said, no, you don't cook it that way. You want to cook it at 200 or 225, which is like 400 or 450. Somebody else said, no, even 150 is a little high. And it became this entire group of people telling me how to cook a turkey. It was so great. Also, the turkey itself looked like no turkey I had ever had. It looked like a French runway model. It was flat-chested, and it had legs that just went on forever. And it was about 12 pounds. And I was worried that I didn't have a pan. I had a very tiny oven. And I was worried I didn't have a pan or an oven big enough. And a friend of mine said, oh, of course you do. Every turkey is the same size. It's made, they're made, and this was, came from a farm, but they're made to fit into a French pan in a French oven. And in fact, the turkey fit perfectly. And I cooked it at 300 degrees and it was wonderful. It was like velvet.
That was Dory Greenspan, cookbook author extraordinaire. We talked about one of Dory's recipes earlier in the show, her famous pumpkin stuffed with everything good. I have to say, can't recommend it enough. And yes, we have a recipe for it on our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. One of my all-time favorite Thanksgiving conversations was one I had with Chef Diep Tran years ago about how growing up in a Vietnamese household, her family treated the turkey like a side dish. Diep has a new cookbook coming out next month with 100 recipes featuring what has become a pantry staple in my house, fish sauce. So in advance of Thanksgiving, I wanted to ask Diep if she has a way of using fish sauce with her Thanksgiving turkey.
And I do like a wet rub. You know, I don't do like a, I don't do a brine, I don't do a dry rub, but I kind of do a wet rub, kind of make it into a paste, fish sauce, cilantro, maybe some coriander, black pepper, a little sugar, ginger, and then rub over the bird. And of course, put it under parchment that's buttered, because it makes a great gravy. We also have that in the cookbook, actually. Every cook that I've roasted a turkey for, they're like, you know, I can't really put my finger on it, but I think it tastes like KFC. And I'm like, okay, I'll take it. I love KFC, so. It's like the secret spice is fish sauce.
What is the place of fish sauce on your Thanksgiving table? Does it make its way into everything?
I don't put fish sauce in everything, but I definitely put it in my turkey and in my gravy, in my porridge for the stock that I make for it. But what's on the table is nukjam, which is like a fish sauce dressing.
So tell us more about the porridge. Is it a leftover situation?
Oh, yeah. So I've kind of like, before I really wanted to have the presentation of the big bird, but now that I'm like, okay, I'm done with that, I just pretty much do it Asian style the way my grandparents did, which is chop it up like a duck. And then so the back, the wing tips, all those go into, like before we eat, all the bones go into a pot, and I start the I start a stock for that, and I just like for like maybe like 6 quarts of water, I'll maybe just do 2 cups of rice. Like you don't need a lot, and we do like Kota brown rice, and then we just put an onion in there and a little ginger, a little more fish sauce, and we just let that go while we're enjoying our turkey. And usually it's kind of like instead of dessert, we're like want a little porridge, you know, it's already done.
It strikes me that porridge is kind of the equivalent of a come back to the table after you've loosened your belt and the level of fullness has dissipated a little bit. Then you can go to the pot and have another bowl.
Yeah, and also, like, if you haven't had rice, you know, a lot of people love rice. Like, they'll, like, the way to ask, like, have you eaten is an geum jeo, which is, like, have you eaten rice yet? So if we haven't eaten rice because we ate mashed potatoes, we got to go get some porridge, you know, to complete the meal.
Oh, so great. Thank you so much, Deep.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure. I love talking turkey with you.
That was chef and cookbook author Deep Tran. The Red Boat Fish Sauce Cookbook comes out next month. And if you are still in search of inspiration and recipes for cooking your Thanksgiving turkey this year, wow, we have countless recipes for that too. You can find techniques for dry brined bird, barbecue turkey, my own turkey leg confit. There's even a recipe for a whole turkey wrapped and roasted in a bed sheet. Definitely one of the most unique Thanksgiving interviews I've ever done. But for now, we turn to something I can't live without on the Thanksgiving table, salad. My co-pilot this year in answering all of your Thanksgiving questions is Genevieve Coe, senior editor at the New York Times. And one question we received was about how to cut through all the richness of the Thanksgiving table.
It's not just that it's so rich that it can, well, at least me, it can make you feel sick. But I think it ends up, flavors start to feel muted because everything is just butter and carbs and cream and your palate is just getting coated. I think one of my favorite things on the table is always the cranberry sauce. So I always want to make sure it's either that the cranberry sauce isn't just sweet, but that you're actually highlighting the tartness. And then I usually love to throw in ginger, something really sharp. But I think it's not just that. I think for all the vegetables, you know, I would finish a lot of things with lemon juice, lime juice, vinaigrettes. Like even if you're doing a big tray of roasted vegetables, sometimes I'll just sprinkle vinegar on them right when they come out and toss them just to like be able to cut through.
And this is the time, I think, to really make good use of pomegranate molasses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love that. All of that
even
richness.
As a child, my mother used to think I was insane, but we had salad every night for dinner. So even on Thanksgiving, I wanted there to be salad.
Oh, and always.
She was just like, why, Evan? But I really think that salad with an assertive dressing, whether or not you go like the garlic anchovy lemon route, or you go like use pomegranate molasses or date molasses in a dressing that's a little sweeter, or even if you make a... you know, a salad that isn't so much about the leafy greens, but fuyu persimmons with some arugula and maybe some walnuts. And use like a sharp shallot based, maybe with mustard, a good dressing that'll just.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually like to do really sturdy salads for Thanksgiving and for the holidays, right? Like a shredded Brussels sprouts or kale or collards. I don't know why people, I love making a collards salad.
I've never heard of that. How do you do that?
The same way you would do kale, but you don't have to like massage it so much.
It's really?
You just slice it. Yeah, you just slice it really thin. I just love collard. I mean, I love them cooked down and all when they get all silky and soft. But yeah, you just slice them really, really thin. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to go at them quite as hard. You just give them a light massage. And that time of year for Thanksgiving, what I would do is I would for sure do wedges of persimmon. I would do persimmon in there. I always love another layer of sweetness, so some dates in there as well. But then I want to go savory too. So for savory, I would do some roasted salted pepitas or other types of roasted salted nuts. And then if I feel like if I taste and I want it to go even more savory, I might do some sliced green olives, Castelvetrano, or like some Parmesan at the very end to go in that really savory direction. And yeah, and I would keep it simple like that. You know, if I wanted another element, I would do some shaved fennel, but I don't think it needs that.
What about a dressing? How would you dress that?
Lemon juice really gives a nice acidic element. And honestly, after that, I would just drizzle with one of my favorite things for these types of salads is not actually drizzling with olive oil, though of course that works, especially if you have a nice olive oil, but I actually love to drizzle with like a roasted walnut oil or roasted pumpkin seed oil, some sort of nut-based oil. Toasted sesame is a little too strong for these sorts of flavors, but you could do a little bit of toasted sesame and then just a neutral flavored oil just to coat. But I add enough lemon juice in that first bit to provide plenty of acid. And usually I'll just zest the lemon in there first just because I hate to waste it. Like why not use both?
In addition to acid and crunch, another way to mix up the monotony of Thanksgiving colors and textures is spice. One of our listeners, Admiral, was hoping to make a salsa with dried chilies. And Admiral, I think this is an excellent idea. My mind immediately goes to a salsa matcha, which would be a great accompaniment, not just to turkey, but to anything, pumpkin, sweet potatoes, and pretty much all the autumnal flavors.
Oh yeah, I love that. Well, I love a salsa matcha because I love the texture. I love those all the bits of the nuts or the seeds. I think that would be really nice. That brings a lot of heat. I think that sounds delicious. So I think that would be super nice. I think if you wanted to something with like a tamer heat, I think any sort of chili rojo sauce like would be really nice too. And you can use milder chilies if you have you know, people are afraid of me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I love about salsa matcha is that you can use chilies that aren't like guajillos, that aren't that spicy. And because there's so many seeds that you can add, like you can add pepitas and you can add the peanuts. Yeah. And that, I think, is such a natural pairing with autumnal.
That sounds so delicious. Yeah,
flavors.
Such a great idea.
Before we get to dessert, I want to share with you another Thanksgiving memory. This one, bittersweet. It comes to us by way of writer Anya von Brenzen, author of the fabulous memoir, Mastering the Art of Soviet Cooking. She sent us this voice memo from Istanbul.
I'm flashing back to our first Thanksgiving in Philadelphia. It was 1974. We just came from Russia. Just me and my mom, we left our family behind. We came as stateless refugees, just two tiny suitcases, $200, entering a completely new life which we had nothing about. There was just absolutely no information about anything American that you could get in Moscow. And we came in October, and in November, it was Thanksgiving, and our kind sponsors, you know, just kind-hearted people who took care of Soviet refugees and just sort of adopted them. They invited us for Thanksgiving with their very large family. It was 1974, so the meal was classic. A massive turkey, just a beast, something I've never seen before in Russia. I don't think I've ever actually seen or tasted a turkey. Cranberry jello, stuffing from a box, marshmallows with sweet potatoes and pumpkin pie. The strangest thing was the mix of the sweet and the savory. We never did this in Russia. So I remember just sitting there kind of pushing around the cranberry jello, which was piercingly sweet, wondering why they're serving dessert during a savory meal. And it was the same case with the sweet potatoes, which were, again, piercingly sweet, and the marshmallows. And the stuffing was this kind of gray, unidentifiable object that had the strangest texture that, I had no idea what to do with it. And I just remember sitting there experiencing this piercing alienation. The biggest alienation, one of the sort of saddest moments in our early American life, where, you know, you just sit there and everyone is happy and everyone had a large family, and it was just me and my mom. We left our family behind, just kind of facing this meal that to me seemed completely inedible and absurd and made no sense. And I think I cried afterwards. I just felt so homesick. We were used to eating very savory things, black bread, pickles, herring, smoky things. And it was the first time us with other family having, you know, a big family holiday with strangers who were like really sweet and kind, but still your family is your family. I still to this day experience this sadness and alienation every Thanksgiving, and I try to avoid turkey and stuffing and just do something else altogether. Nevertheless, my mom, who is very hospitable and an adventurous cook, she decided to host her own Thanksgiving the following year. So she invited a bunch of Russian emigres. She bought the cranberry jello, the stuffing from the box. I think she bought the pumpkin pie because she had no idea how one makes anything like this. And she bought a really huge turkey that we carried all the way from the supermarket, which was far away, and we didn't have a car. There was one problem, though. No one told her that you had to defrost the turkey. So we all know how that story ended. After about 4 hours, the turkey was still frozen inside and burnt on the outside, and it was inedible. But my mom being my mom, she improvised something else. I think she just fried some eggs and served some cold cuts, and we had a merry time. And that was my second Thanksgiving.
When Good Food returns, we finish our Thanksgiving show with a sweet slice of apple pie. Stay close. I'm Evan Kleinman, and this is Good Food. We've reached the end, the last bite, the one many of us look forward to all year long, Thanksgiving pie. I've got a lot of respect for pumpkin and pecan, but you already know this. Apple is my ur pie. And this year, the question Genevieve Coe and I received during our Thanksgiving Q&A was indeed about apple pie. It comes to us from Maya, who wants to know if we have any tips for making a pie with heirloom apples.
Oh, I was thinking about it and I said, I would just say don't sideline the apples by getting too fancy with it. Because heirloom apples.
Just a little sugar, lemon.
Yeah, I wouldn't even add cinnamon.
No, I think the one thing I would do, and I actually do this, you know, if you have a bunch of apples, before I slice or dice, take a little sliver of each and taste, both to get a sense of how sweet or tart, and then also of texture. So if I can tell that the apple's going to collapse to nothing, I'll cut in bigger pieces. And if I can tell that it's quite a firm apple that's going to hold its shape, then I'll cut those pieces a bit smaller so that you end up with the right texture. And then also it gives me a sense of how much sugar and lemon juice to add. I think that's the thing, right, with any fruit pie, but especially an apple pie, we're using all different varieties. It's not a really exact ratio of apples to sugar to lemon juice. It's a matter of the taste of your apples. I don't know. What do you think, Evan?
I totally agree. Whenever I teach pie classes, I'm like, you need to add sugar because you need the juice to start running. So I always say start with a quarter cup of either, I love using brown sugar with apple pie, and then really mix it in and taste it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I do the exact same thing you do in terms of creating an interesting texture. Mm-hmm, you know, like if I'm, for example, not using heirlooms and I have to go to the grocery store, I always want some Granny Smiths for density and tartness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some yellow delicious, which are getting harder to find.
But I love them in pie.
And me too, because they collapse and they have a floral sweetness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I use something like Fuji, just like a great utility apple. Mm-hmm. Somebody else asked about freezing pie filling, which I would not recommend. I mean, the filling is so quick. You can
the best part. Yeah.
Right. And for fruit pie, though, you can make an entire pie ahead and freeze the whole pie.
I usually do that for Thanksgiving, usually like 2 or 3 days or even the weekend, like the Sunday before Thursday. Yeah. If I'm working Monday through Wednesday. Yeah.
And then I just bake it frozen. I just take it out of the fridge and put it in the oven and bake it as I usually would. And it comes out even more fabulous.
Yes.
Because the freezer has just obliterated the gluten, and that steam that comes from that, the burst of heat makes those layers so delicious and flaky.
So flaky. And I don't, in that case, like I don't ever actually brush the top with anything. I like to just
go
in the freezer because all those layers, I want them to have a chance to be free.
Right. Brown. Also, you're not really seeing how cooked your dough is because the brownness that you're seeing is the brownness of the lacquer that you brushed on. And I love being able to see all the little bubbles in the crust. Yeah. I get very involved.
A huge thanks to Genevieve Coe, senior editor at the New York Times, for spending time with me. Our conversation definitely lowered my stress level and reminded me that this holiday is really about having fun. Find your comfort zone and just enjoy the ride. You can find Genevieve and my entire hour-long conversation on the Good Food Instagram page at KCRW Good Food. Also last week, I did an Instagram Live all about pie. It lives as a post on my personal Instagram page at KCRWEvan. If you missed any of today's show, listen on our website or on KCRW's mobile app. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. My thanks to the Good Food team, Jillian Ferguson, Laurel Garcia, and Desmond Taylor. Special thanks to Laura Kondarajan, Amy Ta, Kenny Ng, Gary Masiha, and Nick Lamponi. I'm Evan Kleiman. Happy cooking, everybody. Enjoy the holiday. Don't stress out too much. I'll be back next week with another episode of Good Food.